podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I hit my goals, I let man act like they don't know. Check my record and learn that code. 187, that's Andrew Cole. Murderer beat, I'm cold. I link up with bro, that's I did it like Andrew Cole. I screw my thing, I don't need to talk. I shoot my shot, I hit my goals, I let man act like they don't know. Check man's record and learn that code. 187, that's Andrew Cole. Murderer beat, I'm cold. When I link up with bro, that's I did it like Andrew Cole. I just do my thing, I don't need to. Middle with the field in check like scores. But I still grind and chase my scores. When I get a chance, man's veins get cold.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Mugga. I'm joined this week by one of my favourite co-hosts, good brother Gaz. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. Start of the week. United can't deflate my mood anymore. They haven't been able to for a few years, and I'm sure some of the listeners will be able to relate to that. We're quite numb to it now, so I'm all right.
You can't break my soul.
Bang. Listen, on, man.
For real. It's just us two this week.
Yes, sir.
Just judging by the vibe of who wanted to be on, the amount of listeners' questions we got, just the energy when I'm talking to other Manchester United fans. Everyone's kind of over it, you know. We'll catch up on the week, a couple of games against relegation fodder, which we managed to make difficult work of. We'll work our way backward from yesterday to the midweek game, answer some listeners' questions, and just catch up on the general gist around this club that never really ends, to be honest with you. So that Saturday game was a 3 p.m., it's been a while since we actually played at that time. Honestly, that. So funny, because back in the day when Pogba was about, I say back in the day now, back when Pogba was about, people would always laugh and say, those would always be the games that United fans would say Pogba played sick in, because obviously everyone's watching like other games, and so it wasn't an all eyes on me special.
That when I was like,
Burnley, 3 p.m, I laughed to myself, because it reminded me of that for real. How were you feeling going into this one? So obviously, at Old Trafford, we just come off a tussle, but I actually found it quite fun, I guess. Tussle, but like, I'm not expecting quality, so just in terms of entertainment, fun game against Sheffield United in the midweek. How were you feeling going into this one, Gaz?
Well, quite interestingly, I don't take a United win as a sign that United are on the up or that there's a sort of set of results on the way. I've learned not to expect that from United, especially this season. So even in that sort of January, December period, where maybe we started to pick up 3 or 4 results, I think we had like the Villa game, for example. Those never fill me with hope, because I always lean back to performances.
Yes.
And I always lean back to what I actually see for the 90 minutes rather than moments in a 90-minute game or across 90-minute games, because I think the consistency of performances will always tell you more over a long period of time.
Yes.
So again, as I said, we beat Sheffield United, but we conceded 2 to them and at times looked extremely shaky, as we have all season. So I didn't go into this with much hope or expectation. I wouldn't have been surprised if it was like a 2-1 United win, Bruno and the Maguire header, like as per usual now. Also Burnley, let me just put my phone on silent. Burnley are also on like a silently decent run over like their last 8 games. I think they've got like maybe 1 loss, a couple of draws against sort of like Brighton, they beat Sheffield United, they lost to Everton, but they drew with Burnley, drew with Chelsea, they beat Brentford, they drew with West Ham. So they're on a good run of form, and I think we could see that in the way they approach today's game, actually. And it's interesting, I just think they've settled into now actually being a Premier League side, but maybe it just took them longer than it should have, and it's going to cost them.
Right. You know what? I actually give him kudos, because the way they were getting flogged week in, week out for half the season, probably a little bit more, to even get them to this stage where they're actually competing in the games they're playing pretty much most games, that's testament to his coaching ability, but also his man management. The fact that he's been able to keep the dressing room, you know?
I think it's the biggest task, 100%.
Yeah, honestly, looking at the results, it felt like, look at him trying to be Pep. It's only a matter of time before he gets sacked and the owners do what they always do, can bring it like a Sam Allardyce type, who will just keep it tight at the back, try and win games 1-0 and see if you can somehow just bring it together and stay up, but at least be honest defensively. But he stayed true to his principles. And honestly, even though they're going to go down...
They'll come back up, I think.
Yeah, agreed.
I think they will. It's impressive. And as you said, he has somewhat stuck to his principles. But I think he's also just adjusted to maybe being ever so slightly more direct at times.
Right.
But as we saw the other day, and we'll get into it, Burnley had a lot of the ball. But yeah, I'm sure we'll...
There's something with the team, the players that we have, we're allergic to keeping the ball. Like, you've got a front line that's turnover prone naturally. Anthony, I guess, and Ahmad when he gets any minutes. So you've got a front line that's turnover prone. But then you've got midfielders that are absolutely atrocious at keeping the ball in Bruno Fernandes and Casemiro. But yeah, let's quickly just run through the lineup on Saturday. So the ever-present Onana in goal. We had Wan-Bissaka at right back, Dalot at left back, back two of Casemiro and Harry Maguire. Then had Christian Eriksen and Kobbie Mainoo. And then we had Anthony, Bruno and Garnacho. And then we had Erasmus Højlund up top. When you saw that lineup, did it move you? Did it not move you? Did it sicken you? Like, because that's pretty much our strongest team, apart from obviously the defensive players out, and then impacting where midfielders play. But when you see the team, is it just like a ugh? Or yeah, is there anyone in the like lineup that when you see them that raises your spirit?
This is going to sound wild. There's nobody in that starting lineup right now that I give a shit about. And I will say with Kobbie, it's nothing to do with him per se. It's more the fact that, well, one, should we be so reliant on an 18-year-old questionable? Two, we don't...
I don't even think it's questionable. It's absolutely spot on, to be honest with you.
And we don't play for me anyway, it doesn't feel like we have the players that can get him the ball for him to do what he does best anyway. So, like, for example, if you had a Luke Shaw, who I think needs replacing in the summer, no doubt, just because of injuries. We had a Martinez, great passes of the ball. Luke Shaw's superb at passing the ball into sort of the midfield areas or carrying the ball. Kobbie Mainoo's best skill set for me right now is his bravery on the ball and his ability to dribble and manipulate it. And we don't get him the ball to do so. It's right now, it almost feels like games passing by. And I find it hard to blame him in a sense because, one, we don't have the players to get him the ball. And two, the Premier League is still one of the hardest leagues to play in, especially in those in the midfield area, which he's playing in as an 18-year-old. I don't blame him for the fact that, one, I'm not excited by him. It's nothing to do with Kobbie, if I'm honest with you. It's more to do with the way United are set up right now. There's no one in that team that moves me whatsoever. Let me not get into that too early. Dallas has been half decent. Onana's had a better second half of the season.
Where do you stand with Onana nowadays?
Serviceable, man. That sounds like I'm discrediting, man. Far from. I think he's done a good job in the second half, but he's just prone to stupidness, which we saw. Serviceable. He's not a necessity right now to replace, in my opinion. But I do think at some point, if we could get in a better shot stopper, that could save you anything from 5 to 8 points in the season, possibly. And he made some quality saves, by the way, in the game against Burnley. But yeah, he's just the way his shot stopping technique is very concerning.
It's fascinating. I think that and just his general, like his build and its appropriateness for being a goalkeeper, basically, in my mind. So obviously, based on my experience of De Gea, I definitely appreciate a goalkeeper who's got a bit more mass on them, because De Gea was pretty lean and it meant that he didn't really like to get hurt. It meant that he really didn't get too stuck in. Fair enough. Whatever.
I think it worked in his favour through his agileness, but I think he actually started to lose that agileness as he got older.
Naturally, yeah.
Started to lean into errors, started to lean into stupid shot-stopping decisions, and his ability on the ball also waned, because there was a period in, like, Van Gaal's first season.
I know
it's changed since then, but in his first season, for example, De Gea looks like a very competent keeper with the ball at his feet. And I think that it does play a role in his... firstly, he has declined, and secondly, football has moved on in what it demands from keepers. It's nothing...
Yeah, I think the standard... I've always felt that was, like, the weaker part of his game, but there was a period where he got it decent. But if we were judging it by 20, and that was for like 2012, whenever he joined us, But if we're judging it by like 2024 standards, he's never been that, right?
I agree. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, agreed. Fair. So, obviously got the bill, but just too small. Like, I just don't like keepers that are small. And it was interesting watching Raya on Sunday, even though he's pretty similar in height to Onana. He did do quite well towards the end when part of it was the crosses were quite crap, but he did quite well in the end, like last 15-20 minute period of the game where he really kept jumping up and claiming the ball and really owning the ball aerially. And you know, for me, that's a big thing when it comes to keepers, just being able to grab the ball out of the air and just take the pressure off. You know, the Alissons, the Courtois do that for fun, honestly. Cool. Anyway, so we then proceed. We can get right to the last like 5 minutes or so, 5-10 minutes or so if you want. But was there anything you noticed throughout the game? Were there any players you want to explicitly like mention, call out, any incidents in the game?
This guy is so fed up with United. I think in the first minute of the game, Burnley had an opportunity in behind, which just speaks to our in my opinion, our tactical shape off the ball and it was concerning quite early on. And Burnley had quite a number of opportunities in the first half to score as well as we did. I think both teams started off fairly well. Burnley definitely grew into their game and grew confidence. But I think in the first 15, 20, half hour maybe even, Garnacho had opportunities. He had one from a Bruno cross. He had one in behind as well, which was play. Bruno's cross was actually very, very good. And it was like an on-the-bounce volley. So it sort of met him as it's risen up from the bounce and it's on his left foot in the penalty area, which he was quite unlucky with, because I think that's quite a hard technique to master in terms of finishing that particular type of shot. And I think Bruno had a chance in behind as well. I believe it was him. Breaking an off-the-ball run, which he's quite good at times. Was it Bruno? No, it was Anthony. Anthony made the off-the-ball run from the right-hand side into the left. We had Garnacho as well, who was I wouldn't say he was a threat, but he had opportunities in 1v1 situations. And he had an opportunity as well where he sort of cut inside, which I think was the second half, and tried to sort of whip it round. But Burnley caused us issues, man. They had the set piece, for example. I can't remember who took it, but it was cleared by Wan-Bissaka. Someone's crossed it in and Onana's made an unbelievable save. I'll give him full credit. It was quite instinctive.
Yeah, that was good.
It was a really, really good save, just due through pure instinct. It wasn't like necessarily in the corner per se, but the ability to just read and react was very impressive. But my biggest concern is always the same concern that we have, bro. Like, when you watch United, if United lose the ball, which we tend to do because we don't have the attacking players who are good at retaining the ball. If you look at Anthony, he's probably our best attacker at retaining the ball. But yeah, what does he do with it? Not much, if we're honest. Haaland is still developing in that aspect. And I try to shoot him a bligh in that respect because first season, I just find him annoying. He's a bit of a dork. I'm a hater, though, so I have to...
You got a temper to hate.
Yeah, for real. He's done well in his first season overall. Not for me, but he's done well. And then obviously Garnacho is a turnover merchant and should really be someone that either starts 1 in 3 or comes off the bench last half an hour to give you that impact. Yeah. And then he can grow into being that first team player if he's good enough to do so. We don't have our midfield. Cobby's a great dribbler. We don't get him the ball enough. Bruno's a turnover merchant. And who else did we start? Christian Eriksen, who doesn't have the lungs to get around the pitch anyway. So,
yeah,
you think he's of any worth? Questionable, very dubious. By the half hour, by the first half mark, he's no use to you.
Right.
So Burnley, to my point being, I said all of that to say, there were a number of times in the first half and the second half where in transition, they were just running through. It looks like I was watching the same game I watched in August when Wolves came to Old Trafford, which is the biggest issue. It's continued to be an issue. We lose the ball once and our defenders, it's 3 versus 2.
The team is scary. The job, the job that Ten Hag has done this season has just been, it's been shocking, man. It's been so bad. It's like, just imagine the frustration of watching the same team week in, week out. The same players make the same mistakes, concede the same type of goals. struggle for creativity, chance creation, patterns of play. Like the things we try and do, we don't do them well. That's just, and then you got the manager saying, I tell them to do it. So what are you saying, that your team ignores you? Then you're cooked, brother. So, well, I don't know, man.
Do you know what the issue is as well? If you look at the other day's lineup, and again, injuries are partly a concern, but then you adjust your tactics. Either one, adjust your tactics because of the players you have available. And I'm one for managers who are sticking to their principles, right? I'm not against that per se, but I also think it's worth being somewhat sensible at times with the players you have. You can't have a Harry Maguire, a Casemiro and Christian Eriksen spine of a three, essentially, because Christian Eriksen was like, was our deepest midfielder. You can't have that spine. Try and play an aggressive front-footing style, because when you lose the ball, you are not winning those three versus three, those four versus three, just due to the lack of athleticism. If you look at Casemiro, if you look at them three specifically, Kobbie Lesko and Bruno's so high up the pitch, the distances are way too big. And Burnley again showed again the other day with their sort of opportunities where they should have really. I think they had one in the first half where it was slipped in behind Maguire and their forward was in, really should score. You know, Onana does well. Foster should have scored, his name is actually. Onana gets his arm to it. But yeah, there's just, it was so many opportunities. And again, we've seen it all season, which is the biggest concern, is we're just seeing the same thing again and again.
Yeah, agreed. What did you think of Anthony's goal?
I'm a hater, bro. So I find it hard to give him
any praise, any sort of recognition, anything really.
You know what? Like in credit, he read it well.
Mm.
And just to get in behind, which I was quite surprised about, if I'm honest. Like his ability to actually, once he's read the pass, to have that burst to get in. Excuse me.
All of the season.
It was a bit fluky as well, right? Because he was like stumbling, and so he's done well.
Yeah,
finished, but yeah, I don't know. I'm just not a fan of him. He doesn't bring anything offensively other than retaining the ball and maintaining width, which I think he does well. But again, what do you do when you have the ball?
Yeah,
I don't know, man. I just feel like we're watching the same thing. I'm talking about saying, "Ugh, United, man. Ugh." It was like I'm in a time loop. I must be in like the multiverse of madness, bro.
Yeah, I think that's his first league goal since what, like April last year. So like, yeah, literally a calendar year. Cool. We then go on to concede a penalty. Onana, what the hell,
bro? When I said time loop, I'm telling you, this is like a low key season two thing, bro. This is low key season two time variance thing, because it's the same thing he did against Wolves. Which he should have been punished for, really and truly, and we got away with one. Stupidness, just stupidness. It's pure stupidness. Like, man, it's an obvious penny. There's nothing to say about it. It's a penny. He's come out, he's blammed man in his face one time.
Absolutely insane.
Blammed him. It's a penny.
Crazy. He blammed him, you know?
Gosh, yeah, I have no words for him, bro. Because he actually played really well, which is, I guess, the sadder aspect of it, right? He had a decent game, shot-stopping-wise. But yeah, he's always prone to those situations. And he's not a great penalty stopper either, because we've conceded quite a lot. And I don't think he saved one in the league. I think his only success was in the FA Cup and one in the Champions League. So yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know about United, man. But yeah, just the concern. Again, I don't know if you heard about this in the game, but there were some fans, a whole bunch of fans actually, when Ten Hag took off the two young boys, Rasmus, and he took off Kobbie.
Yeah. What did you think at the time?
Neither were impacting the game. So it's understandable if you have better players coming in. His actual reasoning when he explained it post-match, which is the one thing that's made sense in his post-match conferences of late, or his post-match interviews, depending on which one it was. The one thing that actually made sense that he said was they're both young, in essentially their first season in the Premier League. And I want to keep these guys away from getting serious injuries, which is, Kobbie's had one at the start of this season with the Madrid game, I think it was, when he picked one up. He had some issues last season. Rasmus has picked up little niggles, which has cost us, because I think the one time he picked up the injury, he was in great form as well, right? So I understand where Ten Hag is coming from in that respect. I just feel as though the players that came on for those respective players, Ahmad came on and looked all right, retains the ball well. That's his skill set, right? McTominay came on, did nothing other than get injured.
Yeah, he's missing the Euros now.
Yeah, I think the fan, apparently I came out on IG recently and said he's fine. So
really? Okay.
I think it was like 20 minutes ago. But yeah, what I was going to say was, I think the fans booing that was more just their overall, it's like a summary of everything they're frustrated with. If we weren't drawing 0-0 or winning 1-0 and we had won our last five games, but we were losing 1-0 here or drawing 1-1, they would have less of an issue.
Right.
I just think it's a culmination of a lot of the fans that go to the stadium and their patience, because they have been more so than people you see on like social media, right? And I think it's just a culmination of like a lot of frustration with what they're seeing, because Burnley dominated that game. 53% possession, I think. I think Cole Chapman made more passes than us.
Yeah, 52.3. We had 10 shots on target. They had 7. We had 27 shots. They had 16. They had more touches, more passes, equal tackles. We made more clearances.
They had better chances than us.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Hoyland, obviously,
Rasmus.
He scored in midweek, but the lad's just putting out nothing performances, man.
How do you feel about him?
I just think that he's not obviously in the most conducive environment. Like, it's hard. You barely get the ball with any regularity and frequency, but his movements don't seem like well thought out. So it feels like that's definitely a side of his game that he needs some instruction and support in. He doesn't make good runs, I don't think. And then apart from those things, so those are the things that are like within the system. Individually, not for me. Well, if I'm basing it on what I've seen, not for me, because he's not doing anything well. But looking at him, just the hold up play is non-existent. That's very hard to be a lone striker at this level, and not have that ability to play back to goal, get your teammates involved in the play, link up the play. He's obviously quick, doesn't seem the strongest yet, but he's clearly an athlete, tall, mobile, agile enough. I think it's just hard. Like, obviously, he went on that run of scoring like 7-7. So it goes without saying that in the right environment, I don't doubt he can score goals. But
do you know what, as well?
People
have been like, it's true, but people have said, oh, Holland doesn't get much of the ball, which we saw with that stat that came out about Onana's made more passes to
four
him.
Four passes in the whole 90, yeah. But also with that, do you think he puts himself in position to receive the ball?
Well, then there's the issue. That's exactly where I was leaning to. Like, let's also hold players accountable for some of their issues on the pitch. Like, because I feel as though people want him to do well. So they want to find reason. I do it myself. Like, when I wanted Sancho, I was dying for anything from Jadon Sancho to do well at United. Any little jink, I was like, are you, man? She Sancho, blood. One little jink. You don't see Sancho, blood.
Even now, that brother's starving.
The other day, I sent Sancho's little curl into the... Are you, man? You see?
Like, when you got starving. Yeah, you and Dwayne were really...
He's
funny. You killed me. Like, you know, we'll come and obviously back each other, and I'd be like, whatever. And you'd be like, saying that, like, time will tell. South will rise again.
maybe it is a sad thing, to be fair. But yeah, I think people obviously they want him to do well, and I think that's fair enough.
Yeah.
I don't think he's a bad player. You can see he cares. He's got some ability. He can run. His technique isn't bad when he strikes the ball. I just think he needs to do himself a favour and get himself in better positions, make better runs in sort of in an Ollie Watkins fashion, where Ollie Watkins, and people think Watkins plays as a winger, but he doesn't. What he does really smartly for me is he plays in between at times the sort of fullback and the right centre back or the left centre back, and makes those runs in those little channels in those areas. And also, he's got the ability to hold up the ball because he's a senior pro. He's built his physique. He's in his prime of his career. I'm not expecting Højlund to be able to do what Watkins does, but I'm saying some of that stuff off the ball, some of that positioning and picking up pockets and making yourself available, and how you receive the ball as well makes a big difference, especially if you're not an Ollie Watkins body shape. You want to be receiving the ball potentially like side on rather than back to play if you're not physically as built as someone like a Watkins, or or you know, you're not. But again, it's about also a balancing act of we don't have players that can get him the ball other than maybe, and for me, Bruno Fernandes isn't even a player that would do this, but like, you know, because a lot of Bruno's great passes are more the wonder pass, like the cross or like the diag. None of them are like, I'm on an angle, I'm going to break the line and find my striker in his feet. He bounces it and then we play. It's a lot more like, wow, look at that Bruno pass, rather than breaking lines, punching the ball through like a Roy King would have, like however long ago, or Carrick as a better example from our sort of era. So I think our midfield just don't do them any justice. And it would have been interesting to see him with like a Luke Shaw and a Lisandro who can find those passes from long distance, I think. But yeah, I don't know. I've rambled on.
No, you didn't ramble on. I think the truth is we don't know, right? We don't know. He's been bad more than he's been good, but you're talking about a young player coming over. That good is all we've really got to hang our hat on, you know? I would also love us to get a veteran sort of striker in, a role model, not a Martial, somebody who's, you know, different timeline from Højlund, who's done his bit, scored some goals in a few places, and can really come in, work, mentor.
Who in the market are you looking at, my brother?
I don't even know the market well enough anymore.
Let's go with what we know.
Yeah.
Let's play a game. All right, if I offered you 40 M's for Ivan.
Nah, man.
Let me land. I'm going to go with two more. 40 M's on Ivan. Let's say 100 M's on Isak.
Yep.
50 M's on Dominic Solanke.
Yep.
Or like 60 on Watkins. I'm estimating. I don't know these guys.
That's fine. The estimations work. I get you just the gist of it.
Who you look at as United that makes sense financially, but also who would fit into maybe where United are looking to get to? Because I think Isak's more likely to go to like an Arsenal. But would I like it?
He could go to any team that is a traditional top four side. So one of the biggest sides in the country. But obviously people have made that. Listen, that's an Arsenal player. A good striker, yeah? Oh, that's an Arsenal player through and through. What do you mean by that?
Like, they're man a bit pretentious though.
That's an Arsenal player for what? A talented technical striker, whatever, man. So
for like me, everyone else doesn't want one of them as well.
Right. For me, just going through that list, Tony, no. I mean, for me, the lack of speed is a big issue. Like the lack of foot speed. I just don't particularly like my strikers that way. And I feel like to be able to like play at the highest level without that kind of lack of foot speed, your all-round game has to be brilliant, a la like a Benzema, you know?
He's shy. What a footballer.
You know, like in all the other categories, you're like, yeah, top percentile. So he's not that. So for me, doesn't make sense. And I think he's a different type of striker to Højlund anyway. So when I think about like learning from, and I think he's a bit of a wrong, and I think he's a kind of guy that people would maybe like if he played for their team, bit of like a shit talk on whatnot.
That's a piece of shit.
We've got enough wrong-uns at this club already. So not him. Isak, I think if we were to sign Isak for 100 million, that is now saying that's our striker. And I'd actually be looking at Højlund kind of like, yeah, we're trying to. I don't know that. I remember under Roberto Martinez, and even sometimes I think under Jose, we did right wing Lukaku. I don't know how you feel about Højlund.
Nah, man. I need more jinky in my wingers, man. Nah, that's
well, a a quick Kulusevski sort of vibe, nah? You're not feeling that?
Cars, man. Oh, my God. Carly, probably somewhat better than what we've had. But nah. Have you seen that guy? Who else did we have? We had Dominic and we had Ollie.
Yeah, Dominic. Dominic, I think, at 50 would be a great price. If I was being honest, I think he's probably close to 70, 80, just for how much they've got him for, how well he's done, how high they finished, and his age. He's 26, so going right into his prime, turning 27, like end of the year. He'd probably be my favourite of that group. He's like 5-6 years older than Hoyland, so definitely a player who will like be getting to that kind of 30 age, just as Hoyland's getting to 25. Tall, technical, can score goals, can link up, can press. Obviously, he came through as a really, really highly rated younger player. Right. That Chelsea team, we know all about it, but took him a few years to really find his feet at this level.
Can we just speak on that, though, bro? I know it's got nothing to do with you.
No, bro. We can talk, man.
It speaks to, like, with someone like a Dominic. We don't know what he's going to look like. We don't know what he's going to look like next season. But from everything I've seen, I like to trust my eyes. And I think he speaks to the concepts of giving players time, which again is hypocritical because I've
been on... that's a great point. But what's your balance between so there's a few things you have to balance. What's your balance between talented and not delivering? Yeah, so like I break the player's talent, but they're not necessarily playing up to their talent level. Maybe Marcus Rashford, even though he's given us some top seasons, versus maybe not the most talented, but shows that kind of endeavor and willingness. So maybe Alejandro Garnacho, for example. Like, how do you balance all the different kind of like, yeah, Solanke was very highly rated as a young player. And yeah, he went down the league, banged him loads of goals in the championship, came to this league, struggled for a season. Then he's again adjusted himself. He's a great example of buying low. Like last season, Reams was saying he's got everything he wanted in a striker. He can clearly score goals because he bagged goals in the championship. He scored like 26, 30 goals in the championship. He's like, even if it doesn't translate to him being like, you know, a 20 goal a season Prem striker, he can get double figures in the Prem, you know. That would have been the time to get him. So that's a buying low. But how do you manage all of that? Like, you know how it is. People will have a player they rate. And like, regardless of how that player, this is a great example. People have a player they rate, and regardless of how that player performs, their rating, their respect for that player will not budge. It will not budge. So how do you manage all of that?
I'm quite adjustable, which might sound like the centralist, politically correct thing to do. But I always give grace to talent. Firstly, I think talent is hard, just hard to find as a whole, just through my like experience in football, and then obviously a fan as well. I think like talent. Let's use Martial as a best example. There's another example I have, but he's a wrong one, so I won't use him. But like Martial's talent for me is quite like hard to find. His ability to dribble, manipulate the ball, drive out a man when he was at his best quotation marks. It's quite hard to find. But you reach a certain point where talent, and it sounds cliche, only gets you so far in football. I think we as fans sometimes underestimate how important effort and hard work is. Whatever that looks like to said individual is, and whatever that means to another individual is another conversation. But just the whole mentality, mindset, and effort is very much underrated by fans, I think. And I think at times, when I say fans, I mean particular sets of fans. I think like the match going, United, those type of fans love that shit. Those in Manchester love, that's what they live and die by. I think we can at times somewhat underappreciate how important the other aspects of the game, like the psychological, the mental, the effort, the physical effort of the game. So my thing to summarize is I'm a talent guy first, and I always believe in talent, but I also believe we need to hold talent accountable because you've been given a gift. And if you're not maximizing it, firstly, you're letting yourself down. And secondly, you're probably letting the people that you work with, the fans, the team, etc., down as well. So like with a Martial, unfortunately, I had to give up on that. And I was a huge Martial 9 a.m. person. You're on mute.
I was going to say you articulated yourself really well then. When did you like finally, because he's given us peaks and troughs. When did you finally say, yeah, I'm out, man?
It was, sounds mad to say, it was probably like the Sevilla loan. And when he came back to United and had last season where Ten Hag made him like our number nine and said, this is like my guy for now anyway. it was me with like, it was more so I was in with like, but I've stepped away from you a bit. Like, I like you from a distance, sort of. With Rashford as well, unfortunately, it's somewhat the same thing now. It's somewhat the same thing because, again, talent-wise, undisputable and undeniable. And it's hard to speak about Rash without speaking about everything else that surrounds him.
I'm not speaking that, yeah.
But on a foundational, just football level, he's not fulfilled his talent.
Right.
And there's different reasons why, but we don't need to get into it. We've discussed those numerous times. He hasn't fulfilled what I would like to think his ceiling is. And his floor is the bar is very low for him when he's bad. So yeah, I think with talent, I'm always a talent guy first, more than like the effort, and because I think you can mold those sort of nuances into a player. You can't mold talent, like you can't create talent. Talent is somewhat like a God-given thing for me. You can work on it, but there's always a foundational aspect where you've got something to work with. You can't make Conor Gallagher now into a Eberechi Eze. You can't. Impossible. It's never happening. So I'm always going to lean to an Eberechi. Can I get Eberechi now to do what I need? Everything else, all the extra.
And that's like, that's very hard to know, right? Because that's a player personality thing. That's a player application thing. Some ballers are prima donnas. They don't do the dirty side of the game. They don't do the effort side of the game. But that's also a nod to the manager, right? Getting players to buy in and like, you run, we win this ball. And we've seen like
Pep Hazard, Jose.
Yeah, like Pep's a brilliant example. He's been able to take the most talented and turn them into workers. And it's easy to do that when you're guaranteed the win, isn't it? Like, we play this way. Like, this is what I'm saying. When you're coming into a dressing room at a big club, like, obviously, at Barca, it was different. He was a captain there. He's Catalan, so he had a special relationship with the club. He's the kind of player that was a mentor to these guys who came up through the club. So that's a bit different. But then once he did it there, he just had that cachet. But, like, when you want the players to be able to do that dirty side, because there's absolutely almost, like, no team at the highest level now who isn't pressing in some sort of way and trying to win the ball back off the opposition closer to their goal, because we know how hard it is to break down well-organized, deep-block teams, right? So I say that to say, like you said, can you get an Eze to do the other side of the game? Sometimes it's not even about Eze. It's having that right man manager to bring that side out of Eze, right? And then what makes a player continue to do that is seeing the rewards of doing that, right?
Facts, bro.
We're working, we win games, we win things, and there's never going to be the guarantee, whoever your manager is, that you need to do that. But I think that's always been the hardest thing for me to balance, that kind of balance between rating a player's talent, but when they don't perform on the pitch, you're like, oh, it's a manager's job. It's a manager's job to bring talent out of players. This is if you're not playing, the manager's not using them right. Sometimes the player's just a piece of shit.
I've been guilty of it with, like, Martial. I think there were at times he did maybe like flag it in a bit with like a Jose, and somewhat understandable. We've all been there at work where you have a manager and we think they're a piece of shit, and our work levels might for a couple of days might not be as high as it is, and then you end up getting back to where you're supposed to. That happens. I think it happens in football. I've seen it enough times myself. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, as we've said, talent should always be like your first and foremost importance, and then can you either get more effort out of the players you have or surround them with guys like a Darren Fletcher who can come in and still is technically decent, but you know he's going to do those yards, you know what I mean? So yeah, that's how I tend to like lean with Rash. I'm not out with Rash. I still think he should be at United. If like from a selfish perspective, would love Rash to stay, but we've also seen a decline in some of his attributes, unfortunately. So
there's been a physical decline for sure. And I think does that, because we've had this conversation in the chat quite a bit, some people feeling like he should be a nine and we've really just taken ages. But listen, let me land. Where you watch it now and he's kind of clearly lost that one-on-one ability that you need in a wide man, does that potentially change? Because what is he out wide without that one-on-one ability?
He I don't want to compare these two because
yeah, compare it, bro. We're just talking football.
He could be somewhat of like a somewhat of what a Salah was for Liverpool.
Okay.
When Salah was obviously their wide forward and their main goal scoring threat.
Yeah.
And generally speaking, had the ability to beat a man, no doubt, but wasn't necessarily, in my opinion, amazing at it. But again, it speaks to do you have the players to get him the ball in those situations? Liverpool had Trent, they had Firmino, they had Mane. They had someone like Ronaldo who could carry the ball. United are nowhere near that. So where will we? The sirens, man. I need to shut my door. I'll do that in a second.
Yeah, for you, brother.
probably, bro. But I can't see it now, but I could see it in another system or another team where he could be that player. I just wonder where that ability to like to beat a man, pause, beat a player 1v1 has gone. It's
it's only obvious, so I wouldn't even call it.
Yeah, I just wonder how that. Obviously, I get it. The physical decline is definitely impacting.
Was he doing it last season?
Nah, he wasn't. Nah. Anyone that says he was, I don't think he was. He was.
But how was he getting it cooking last season? Was it running onto fools?
I think it was a lot of those. A lot of those situations. Don't get me wrong. He had situations where he did beat players 1v1. Let's not like minimize.
Yeah.
His thing to say. He's gone from doing it to not. There's always a middle ground where it's just not what it was when he burst through 14, 15. 15, 16, he burst through. And then obviously he had some of those peaks and troughs in like 1920 and lockdown ball, etc., etc. It's concerning because we're holding on to, his wages are big. He's a big sort of personality in the team, but he's getting off the field. He's got off the field issues with the fan base, racial and abuse-wise and discrimination-wise. Which just lead to you like, where do we go from here next season? Is he just going to have another great season? But then what happens from there? Where do we go from you going from 8 goals in 50 games to if you end up scoring 25 next season? What do we get from you next season? Because he's shown a level of inconsistency. I think that's where we need to hold him accountable, unfortunately, in my opinion. It's concerning. It's concerning, like, what the future is. Because he should essentially be our best forward. And our like best creative output, one of our better outputs in terms of creativity, and it's just none of those at the moment,
brother. It's
we're relying on Garnacho.
Yeah, that's why I kind of use him on that spectrum because you know you have a lot of fans who have bought in, and there's one thing that football fans say that I can never really get behind at this age, you know, and obviously there's. An assumption always that a younger player is going to improve. But like, for example, when people say it like about Cole Palmer, like at 20 or however old he is, 21, 22, what are you telling me? That is what is going to get to the stage where he's scoring 30 league goals? Like what is your point? When you say that, what point are you trying to make? Obviously, they're talking about their player's improvement, which we also know isn't linear. Like next season, you could be a little bit worse for whatever reason, right?
We'll do well to get anywhere near what you've done this season, let's be honest.
So I feel like most fans really operate in a kind of show and prove world, and that's why the likes of Bruno Fernandes, despite all the kind of negatives in his game that people will call out, he puts up numbers. And so when I get on a podcast and say that he's not good, and I absolutely
but they're not listening to the nuances of why you say he's not.
They don't care. They don't care about the nuance. They're results driven. It's results driven analysis.
But I also think you could argue we as United fans that maybe aren't as keen on him could do better in particularly saying not that he's not good. He is good in a particular realm and for a particular reason. But we need more from a player in that position. But I think we do that enough, but people don't want to listen. Maybe they catch a little bit of the pod or snippet and then they'll be sensationalist with it rather than actually listening to the nuance of why we say he is a good player in a sense, but where does that get you, essentially? Where does that get you?
Yeah.
Could you see Bruno in a Pep team?
I could see it in a Pep team, but not as a starter. Like I feel like Pep can use all multitude of players, but how does he use them, right? Like, Nunez barely gets game time. Kovacic is out the side. Like, I wouldn't, I guess what you're asking is, like, would he be a linchpin? I don't see it. I don't have the close control. Like, I do want to think back to how he played last season, and I think he did really show a lot more caution on the ball, a lot more, like, understanding of keeping the ball, and I think he spoke about it quite a bit in terms of the importance of keeping the ball. But we saw his productivity massively decline, and I think that was always my point, that what it takes for him to put his numbers up in terms of quality of execution always meant that you were giving the ball back to the opposition for the most part. And, you know, every opportunity where you misuse the ball, miscontrol it, mispass it, make the wrong decision, we call that opportunity cost. There's a potential opportunity there which hasn't been realised due to the decision that you've made. And just because you score a goal or get an assist, all the other opportunities that you didn't maximise or you used objectively incorrectly or poorly, those matter when somebody's analysing the overall performance. Obviously, in those, in the context of you, like the assist or the goal wins us the game, cool, we won today, and therefore you contributed to the win. But it's like you said at the top, it's spotting patterns and looking at things that are gonna last, right? Things that are gonna trend, things are gonna that are gonna scale. So if the actions that you execute are similar every single game, yeah, you'll see in the games against the poorer sides, we get more of the ball. So you get more opportunities, more reps, and eventually you do something good. There's a reason why his worst performances are always against the best teams. We barely get any of the ball, so he barely gets the opportunity to do that kind of repetition until something good happens. But I guess it's just me thinking about the way we like look at players, rate players. Oh, look at this. You know, this guy scored, so he's a good goal scorer. This guy didn't score, so he's not a good goal scorer. This guy did this, so he's a good footballer. And I just think it makes everything very reactive, you know? And I think it's easy to be reactive. I think football fandom is all about being reactive. And I think I would I would love us to just take a second, really critically analyze what we're watching and start to spot trend, you know? Be scouts. That's what scouts do. Scouts look at a player and see raw potential. Some are like blatantly obvious, a young Cristiano Ronaldo, Wayne Rooney, Lionel Messi. Like, you only need to watch those guys once at 15 to probably know they're going right to the top. But there's all sorts of players. There are guys who at 15, 16 maybe looked okay and have ended up being talented footballers. There's some that looked amazing. There's so many different ways to skin a cat. And I wish people would just spend a bit more time taking it in before they analyze. And it's not about people agreeing with me. I'm open to having like any conversation with anybody about football, as long as like you can articulate why you think what you think, and I can track where your thought process is coming from, even if the conclusion you come to isn't one I agree with. I respect that. I think it's important. That's what makes football so interesting, life so interesting. We look at the same things and we come to different conclusions, you know.
But it's, I think it's like the not to stay too long on this, like the sacrifice that everyone does right now.
Yes.
People want to have a definitive, he's better than him. And right. It's like, I understand if you have a reason and you think Saka's better, like, I'm not saying it's wrong, but like, people want to just have a critical, today, 24, he's better than him, here's why. He played for Arsenal, he scored this amount of goals, and he's he plays with KDB and Haaland and, I don't know, Johnny Stones and et cetera, but we don't know how Phil would look in the Arsenal team if he was given the literal responsibility of playing week in, week out from the age of 18 and he's the man. But people want to like have a point and stick on it and make like everyone hear that sort of point that like he's better than him or he's better than him. And I just find it a bit boring, especially that one. That one quite drives me personally. But yeah.
Yeah, no, I think you really make a great point, man. It's fascinating. It's honestly fascinating. Next thing I want to discuss with you, elephant in the room, kind of touched on it already, is Marcus Rashford. So,
boy,
yeah, we've spoken about this ad nauseum on this pod. You know, we had listeners who kind of like message in and they say, you guys aren't being fair, you're not being consistent, you criticize Bruno, you don't criticize Rashford. And I think
you get that, yeah, serious,
yeah, we do get that. It's kind of like what you said on the main pod yesterday. We're overly protective of Rashford now because of the way people speak about him on social media, the fan base, the actual football media. We feel like as a platform, like we don't want to contribute to that noise. That doesn't mean that we don't see his performances, and I think we've spoken more on his performances because, yeah, we have a due diligence and a justice we have to do to ourselves as fans of the game. But we saw the tweet that he put out a few days ago, talking about it being enough. And we saw the comments today say from Ornstein basically saying that as far as the club is concerned, they want him to stay and regain his best form here. And unless he expresses an interest in leaving, they won't be looking to get rid of him. So congratulations, Elijah, wherever you are. Where do you stand on the feedback from the club, what he said? And yeah, would just be interested to hear your thoughts, really.
He has every right to speak out. People are saying, oh, like, we stuck by you all this time. And but I've seen, like, the typical, like, United fan base, the Yadars, whatever you want to call them, excuse me, saying, oh, we stuck by you for all these years and this is how you pay us through poor performances and coming out and moaning on social media. But at the end of the day, you don't know the range of the abuse that he's receiving. So for you to come and say, oh, you buckle down and get on with it and give us performances, like, these are human beings. This impacts them beyond just on the pitch. They carry this stuff with them in their personal lives. They're human beings. It is just football. Like, when you scale it and you talk about what we're talking about here, it's just football. I love the game. Grew up in it. It's been part of my life, my entire life, pretty much. But it's just football. We can go to sleep and there are bigger things going on in the world. I did find it funny he blacked out his avi. I'll be real. I found that a bit humorous. I'll be honest. I'm not saying he, you know, like the BBM times where, like, Jans would, like, yeah.
Grime mode. I'm on grime mode. No love.
Yeah, like, leave, yeah, growing out the hair, all of that. Like, I did find that funny, but on a general serious basis, he has every right to speak out. I think firstly, the Telegraph reported it. I think it was James Ducker came out and said, and then the Athletic followed up saying, with Ornstein saying, United aren't listening to offers, but they would be, it has to be something substantial. That doesn't surprise me. I think everyone's on a chopping block if the right offer comes in, other than maybe Cobby and Rasmus for different reasons. But I think everyone else is serviceable and could potentially be gone depending on the right offer. I don't think teams right now would pay anything for Rash compared to what we'd want. In comparison to what we'd want for him. So
Do you think so? I feel like...
For what we'd want for him, though.
I think if you were to ask in footballing circles, people would blame Manchester United as an environment more than they'd blame Marcus Rashford.
But what do you think? What would teams be worth?
I think you'd get close to 100, if not 100.
What's so close, though? If you're talking 75, potentially.
No, like 90. Like, I think you'll get... Like, that's who? The market.
Huh? Who?
Not ask me who made PSG, you know, somebody that
PSG could, especially if Mbappe goes. I could see that happen.
Like, the market now is that a good / great, whatever you want to see him, DM goes for 100 million. You're not going to tell me a 26-year-old Marcus Rashford. If Rashford was in form, his price is probably around 150.
Yeah, fair.
I think for Rashford that's out of form, like, the market is still like 75. What in 2024? I think if he was like maybe a couple of years older, yeah. But I think the general consensus is he's respected in footballing circles, and people would give more of the blame to how he's been to the club, because we see that pattern. Like, talented, we've had talent. Obviously, we're starving for talent now, but we've had talent here over the last 10 years, and none of it has panned out. There's only one common denominator, Manchester United Football Club.
Yeah, no, I think maybe like the starting base then. Let me recant slightly. The starting base offer might be something around like a 75, as like, this is our first offer to you and we'll work our way towards like the 100. I don't want to see him go. I wouldn't be surprised just based on the last few seasons and the amount of abuse. Excuse me. And the fact he actually spoke out about it is the bigger concern, I guess.
for his sake, it might be best for him, if I'm honest, for starting fresh. Haven't been at the club for how long. From a selfish perspective, I'd like to see him not have to be... And this is going to be sound maybe surprising. I don't think he should have to be the best player in the team. I don't think he is that guy, as good as he is. I think we saw the best of him when he had just had great players around him. When he had Pogba, Martial, and the other Rongen. Like, when he's just around great players, I think we see his levels raise. And I think it takes pressure off him. I think him having to be the main guy is maybe asking a bit too much from him, especially where he's at now, in terms of some of the declines that we've seen, some of the decline we've seen in some of his attributes. But yeah, I'd like to see him stay. Selfish perspective. I'd like to see him stay. I think it'll be...
So you've admitted it's a selfish perspective. If I asked you, how do we feel about Marcus Rashford 5 years from now?
Try.
What do you say?
What does that mean, though?
How do we feel about him as fans? What's his reputation as a player in the game?
Oh, I'm looking forward to the future, basically. And like,
You want to stay? I'm basically saying, to what end? You know, what do you expect to have? He stays. He's here until he's 31 at least. How do you think you feel about him when he's 31 and he's been at Manchester United in the first team for over a decade? You couldn't say. Is that real? Like, I feel like he should firmly have eyes on the all-time goal-scoring record. He scored now 131 goals in 399 games. So one in three. And Rooney's record, let me just double-check. I want to make sure I do my goal justice. 252 and 559. So he needs another 122, you know? So if I said 5 years from now, 122 goals, so a little bit more than 25-ish a season, all comps, does he get there? It's actually crazy because he's had two stinker seasons, hasn't he? He's had an 8-goal season and a 5-goal season.
I said, goodness me.
Right.
I don't think he said
5 years from now, you don't think he has 253 goals?
No.
How many goals do you think he has 5 years from now?
If he stays?
Mm-hmm.
He's on what now?
He's on 131.
180, oh, that's harsh.
Fucking hell.
I said that's harsh.
All comps.
Two ten, 220. Yeah, in between that.
Fair. That's a healthy gamble, I'd say.
Yeah, you know? No. The 180 was
180 is mocking. 180, I'd say, why do you want him to stay? You know? It's sad that I asked that question because it's like everybody's saying they want him to stay,
What end?
I think it's like, to what end? Nah. Like, if there's not a confidence, like, people wanted Martial to stay because they believed he was a good player, and once he got fit, he'd be able to be a really good player. I feel Manchester United fans want Rashford to stay out of a balance of, I don't want to see him potentially do well elsewhere. And he came from the academy. Like, that's really it. Like, you know, it's not from a, like, irate bro, and I feel like he will get back to his best, you know.
Oh, United, man, goodness gracious me. We've managed to get an hour out of this, you know. That's kind of wild.
We're just talking ball, man. Like,
yeah, we've done well.
The deeper ingrained issues at the club are so real. So we could literally talk about it all day.
Have you seen what they said about Wilcox having a bit of an audit and whatnot?
I mean, the only question, answer, whatever you want to say, is manager got a goal. I'm looking to see how he clears out the dressing room, tries to recoup some decent fees for players. It's really going to be an interesting summer. We're hearing Tuchel. How do you feel about Tuchel?
the whole disruptive aspects of his relationships with players to a lesser extent, but just, yeah, he tends to fall out with clubs. It's not great. I think United kind of maybe somewhat need to let go of the idea of you're going to have a manager for like 4 or 5 years. I don't think that's realistic.
Really?
No, as in with the current state of just the market, that's a rare gem. Like, how many clubs do that succeed at the top level? PSG, turnover managers. Like,
I feel like if we can't, then whoever the managers are not successful. Like, it takes about that long to build a squad, like a true squad that's in your image, right? You can compete in that time, but to really build a true squad, I'd say it takes about three, four years, right? So
in your shape and in your nature, for sure.
Yeah. So I'm and like personnel, right? Like, they'd come in, they get to get a couple of players this season, this summer, maybe 2-3, maybe a bit more. Cool. Then, depending on how successful you are, you have a bit more money. Let's say one of those first three seasons, you regress a bit, and you don't necessarily get into Europe or whatever the case may be. Like, remember, this has hampered us so much. This chopping and changing of managers, squads that are based on like 2-3 different managers' preferences. The manager gets backed heavily first season, does well. Then the club's like, well, we're not backing you again. And the manager's like, yeah, I did well. Now let me get a bit more to get closer to what looks like good to me. And then they don't get back 2 summers in a row. And then the team, like, we've seen it under every single manager. So
that speaks to the issue of not having... That speaks to the issue of who is deciding the way you want your teams to play from all levels, men's, women's, academy. How you want your teams to play, who's deciding that? Well, really and truly, in today's world of football, it's not the manager, it's
right.
Directors of football, whoever that takes that mantle and that role. So in this instance, Ashworth and Wilcox to a lesser... Well, Wilcox and Ashworth, when they come in, they choose the system. So essentially, in my mind, don't get me wrong, I would like to have a manager for like 4 or 5 years. Bring me my way of caring, you know what I'm saying? Bring my way of caring, you know what I'm saying? But yeah,
I'm watching, like, they're playing with their food, man.
Yeah, they're playing it still. But remember who they're competing against. Look at Leeds as well. And you know what, Strokes, they only need, they need a win and a draw. And they're
packed. Yeah, like, if they'd won on the weekend, because again, they gave away some silly goals.
Stupid
if
goals.
They'd won on the weekend, then they could have even lost one of these last two games and drawn one, and then that would have been it. Like, so they're really leaving it. Like, they got a game tomorrow. They win that. They got a final home game against Huddersfield, which
that's food. That's food.
So it's all about tomorrow. But anyway, we digress.
Yeah, I would like a manager that's here for like 4, 5, 6, 7 years. Like, a Klopp's been, I think he's even been 9 years. I'd love that. I'm looking at the market of football as it is today, and then looking at United. I don't see it as realistic as it stands, but I agree with you. Player turnovers, in terms of players that come in that don't fit specific managers, speaks to the lack of identity that a club has. And I'd like to think Wilcox and Ashworth can bring that in.
I guess so. And then on the Ashworth front, they're going to some kind of tribunal because Newcastle want their 20 M's, i.e. the remainder of his contract. And obviously Manchester United are saying, and Ashworth are saying, like, no way, Jose. So the fact they're even going to a tribunal indicates to me that they're pretty confident they can win. And I think from Newcastle's perspective, we'll just make it take as long as it possibly can, make you as uncomfortable as we possibly can, impact your start date for as long as we possibly can. Like, F it. Like, the same way City flood their charges thing with dozens and dozens of lawyers. These lot, you know what? We'll put the lawyers behind it, but I think they'll probably look at, like, I don't even want to get into the law bag. I think they're probably confident to win that. But it's the time that it takes to get into court, right? A ruling, et cetera, et cetera.
It'll be interesting for sure. I think for both parties, it'll be better to have it sorted because Newcastle would want to bring someone in as well. And United want the guy in as soon as possible. I think one of the things will be don't target players that we've targeted. I saw that somewhere. So
what is that? That's crazy.
Yeah, I saw it online. I can't remember where I saw it though.
That's crazy because I don't know how like good his like obviously well we assume the scouting network was top, but I feel like him, Omar Barada, it's like with any time you leave a job for another job, the first thing you're doing is taking the proprietary knowledge, the things we do well in my previous role, part of the reason I got this new role, to your new place. You know, the most of the time you're going to a new place, you're getting a promotion, you're getting more senior. So, you know, if you're going from like an assistant to the head of, you're taking all the tools, resources, and stuff that you use in the other place, and then head of, oh, I've got an idea, let's use this. That'll keep you hot in your role for like a year. You know, just drip feed it, just drip, 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 drip feed it in. So I think not expecting somebody to move to a new club and identify, obviously you wouldn't have had the conversations, built the relationships with different clubs, but not to identify the players, the talents, is not realistic. But we'll see, man. Maybe that's how they end up settling it. But him and Barada, I'm assuming they're coming, and Wilcox even, they're coming with that proprietary knowledge, man. That's what they're getting. That's what they've been brought in for.
Let's see how it pans out, brother. Let's see, man. I'm going to stop talking about them, man, until summer anyway.
Fair.
Yeah, I do find them intriguing. I find how Ineos looks. I'm interested to see how that will look in the next couple of months. But a lot of it is now us speculating.
I always say speculation is just, yeah, I always say the same
devil's
thing.
Devil's work for real.
Devil's work for real, my brother. Oh, man. Let's finish up with some listeners' questions. The fact that we don't even have any is so indicative to me of the fact that like everybody's over it. but first one is from Chris U29OR. Any centre backs you are keen for United to sign?
I haven't kept up with Ball Brother, so everyone's saying Jared Brentford. If everyone says he's the guy, I guess he's the guy, man. I don't know. I ain't kept up with what's going on in Europe in terms of the top players. So let me not pretend and act like I have. I hear Jared's good. From what I've seen, he looks good left-footed as well. But they're gonna slap us up with a hefty, hefty fee. Going to be a nasty one. So
Maguire-esque, maybe.
It's going to be nasty. So, yeah, if you're not, I don't think United have got money like that.
So, nobody has. I think that's how they stop anybody like signing them. If they, you know, sold Stones to City for 50, like what, seven, eight years ago.
Wild when you think about it. Wild.
Yeah. Like that scales up to 70-ish now. Same thing, young centre back experience in this league. I like Gehi from Crystal Palace. Only issue with him is not the tallest. I think he's only 6 foot. I do like my centre backs to be a little bit taller, 6'2"-ish, 6'3"-ish. Really dominate physically, aerially. Huh?
He's a good player.
He is a good player. I like Gehi. I don't know how much Palace would ask for him. I'd think
Palace do well, you know, when it comes to picking up the young English gems. They've got that Wharton from
they do their thing. Eze as well. At least they pattern that championship market very, very well, man. Obviously, we've seen them, like, the manager's got them humming at the minute. So I like Gehi too. Obviously, Tosin is going to be going for a free from Fulham. I think it would be silly of us not to get him in as an experienced Premier League centre-back. He's tall, he's athletic, and he's not going to cost us much money. Like, we have to be shrewd. We want to have a good depth of centre-back, but we also want to use our money wisely. So I think Tosin's also a no-brainer as well. But yeah, like you, I'm not super, super well-versed. I just don't want us, like, paying a king's ransom. So if they're slapping 70 million on Brentford, like, I ain't mad at it. You're probably worth it. Just go France, man. Go France. The conveyor belt continues, brother. The 30 million, 40 million, you get the next Saliba. Like, there's just a conveyor. I know they got that Lenny Yoro who's linked to Madrid. So that means the game's done. Once Madrid comes sniffing, it's over. But listen, there's always that conveyor belt of athletic, technical players in France. So, yeah, if you're asking me, it'd be Gehi, Brentford. I completely agree with you, and then Tosin as well. And then for anyone else, go to France. Yeah,
that's
go to France. Next one is from Slim Popper _AYO. What's our worst transfer post Fergie? Also, 10 million on Armed Robber for 1 year or 50 million on Fred Quinn for 5 years. Did you see the goal Fred scored for Fenerbahce the other day? Listen, man, I will never forget you, Fred Quinn, man. That was an error. We lit the streets up, man. Fred Quinn, that was a crazy time to be alive, man.
Was it last season before, right?
Yeah, it was a season before. It meant more, man. Fred Quinn, listen, cryptocurrency, a man manifesting as a cryptocurrency. It was mad. The market was as volatile as hell on a game-to-game basis, man. Nobody made more money than me and Jeff in the Fred Quinn market. Fred Quinn market. But you're saying Amrabat for 1 year for 10 or Fred for 5 for 50. Amrabat, just because of how quickly you can get the player off your books. Fred, for all his good he did as a mascot and a bit of a fan favourite. We were lumped with that lad for ages, man. Another case of Pep hitting us with a hezzy, man. City were linked, so we went in, then he pulled it back. He's hit us with a hezzy a few times, man. He's like
Kyrie Irving yesterday, man.
That's what it looks like, bro. Pep is what it looks like. Hit you with a hezzy, man. He'll beat you on the pitch, but then he'll also do the off-the-pitch stuff. Raid us by Cristiano Ronaldo, Harry Maguire. Listen, man. The man is a nutter. It's like, it's that aura. When a manager has that aura, like him even being linked to a player makes people rate. Yeah.
Yeah.
When we know that he says he wants a certain profile and they go and compile a list and say, this is what you're getting, rather than him sitting there and being like, you know. But I remember when we were linked, I watched a comp and it was against City for Shakhtar in a CL and he looked immense, man. It was mad. Obviously, the engine was there, but playing out of pressure, winning 50-50s, combative, progressing the ball.
Yeah, man.
Like, obviously, he's not the best player and whatever, but listen, man, players, environment, all that stuff matters, man. Cool.
Wow.
Next one from CNG boy. Bottom three ETH signings and top three, loans included. Wow.
All of these questions, part of me is like, go away, man. not to the listener themselves. It's just like,
It hurts. It means less.
Just because it feels like we've answered this in different ways before. Like, just remember talking about players. So that's, the top three best and worst, yeah?
Yeah, top three best and top three worst.
Do loans count?
Yeah, loans included.
Amra, because we had to pay a fee.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony with ease. Goodness gracious me. How can I forget that? I actually don't think Weghorst was that bad alone in the concept of he's not a great player. I think there's worse. I'm almost leaning towards Mason Mount is worse than Onana.
So who's your three worst? Anthony.
Off the dome, Anthony Mount and Amrabat.
Anthony Mount and Amrabat, cool. What's your three best?
Martinez.
Mm.
Jesus Christ. God forgive me. Lisandro Martinez.
That's it, yeah?
Lisandro Martinez. Lisandro Martinez. Look, is there anyone else you can think of?
Nah, like Tyro Malaysia, like they posted a picture of him the other day and somebody's like, yeah, now post it again, but with him holding today's newspaper. Hoyland, no chance. That would just literally be on numbers. Casemiro, no chance. And who else has he brought in? Onana's probably in there, man.
Just for
breaking even. No, the bar is just that low. Yeah, that's breaking even. We're saying he's broken even. He's not good. He's not bad. Just meh.
Yeah, let's go. Yeah, that's two.
That's it. No one else. I can't think of a third. Like, he's just kind of gotten the best out of some players who've been here for a while. So, yeah, man. But it's shit. Like, listen, the game is shit. We're going into them not particularly confident. Doesn't matter if we're playing bottom of the table, mid-table, top of the table. The football's poor. The morale is poor. Bruno Fernandes seems to have, like, found a second wind and is, like, fighting for his life for some reason.
What the worst thing is, bro? These lot actually haven't given up. That's the scariest thing.
I thought he had a few weeks ago. I was like, rah, they finally broke Bruno. Like, wow, they finally broke Bruno. That means we're done. But I don't know if he's, like, he spoke to himself and propped himself back up. But, yeah, man, he's back in there mentally. He's back. He's locked
even
in.
Like, even the team, bro, like, we can critique, and we are going to critique their like ability and understanding of the game to an extent.
Yeah,
but like, I don't think they've like given up on Ten Hag, which is the scariest part, because they're actually trying. That's what's worrying. That's the most damning thing is that. I don't know, man. Scary stuff. But yeah, two signings for me is just those two.
Fair enough, man. Listen, bro, I don't even know how we pulled out an hour plus pod. For the United fans who are listening, listen, man, just keep the faith, I guess. Like, we will not stop until we make United great again. So, listen, we've got a whole new regime in the summer. We're going to get rid of some of this dead weight. We're going to get rid of this rubbish manager. We're going to get a better manager in. We're going to get some better players in. We're going to start to play some football that actually makes sense. And then we wait, we build. We've seen it happen to multiple other teams within this league, within world football. You just need to get that managerial appointment right. Then you need to get the right players around them. And maybe the right managerial appointment won't be the first one, but this regime looks like they've come in to bring Manchester United back to the top of the game. So that's a hell of a legacy for Sir Jim Radcliffe to leave for himself with everything he's already achieved in business. So should be excited, man.
Let's see how it goes. Let's get to the fucking... We've got Arsenal coming up, Newcastle. Let's ruin Arsenal's season. That's
my Roman Empire. Ruining Arsenal's season, man.
I'll take anything to ruin their season, I'll be honest with you.
Honestly, mate. Let's ruin it. We're going to lose in the FA Cup final to City. F it. Foden dropping a goal on our head top. Haaland's got to eat as well. And KDB, long kiss goodnight, man. So, listen, we go again. Bro, appreciate you coming on once again, and I'll see you next week, man.
No worries, brother.
Peace.
My shot, I hit my goals, I let man act like they don't know. Check my record and learn that code. 187, that's Andrew Cole. Cold. Murder a beat, I'm cold. I link up with bro, that's I did it like Andrew Cole. I just do my thing, I don't need to talk. I shoot my shot, I hit my goals, I let man act like they don't know. Check man's record and learn that code. 187, that's Andrew Cole. Murder a beat, I'm cold. When I link up with bro, that's I did it like Andrew Cole, I just do my thing, I don't need to. Middle of the field in check like scores, but I still grind and chase my goals. When I get a chance, man's veins get cold.
Sports Social Podcast Network.